Sven Molyneux from Free Domain. So you know I'm not a big one for giving warnings before shows, but I'm doing it this time. This is not something for children. If you have a history of abuse, particularly sexual abuse, please be aware, be alert, be ready. Do not operate heavy machinery, do not drive, and do not do anything that requires less than your full attention, because this is really one of the most evil situations I've ever experienced in 20 plus years of doing this show. So just please, please, please be aware that this is very volatile stuff and be prepared.
I saw you on with Sam Hyde the other day, and he's actually the guy who introduced me to you a little bit. So I was interested, and I've been listening to your stuff and how your brain, your food for thought while I'm at work sometimes, and it's and I thought that this would be really cool.
Well, great. How did you find the Sam? I haven't watched it yet. How did you find the Sam show appearance?
Yeah, it was really fun. I liked the I liked how you could talk to everybody and help them to have an insight on their like what they're going through, or like what maybe their childhood led them to be the way they are and things like that. And dealing with Sam's antics and things like that, that was fun. And I'm interested, and I'm just here to, I guess, like, have you help me unfold some mental chatter and clutter and things like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm pretty good at. So I appreciate that. It's a public call, so if you can just remember to stay off names and places, I would appreciate that. And I'm all ears. Lay it on me. How can I best help?
So I guess we could go into my relationships a little bit, and the dynamics inside of them. This isn't you're not a therapist, but I see the way you work with people to figure things out and things like that. So
yeah, I do the philosophy stuff. So I'm trying to sort of look at patterns and contradictions and root causes. So yeah, how's your life as a whole going these days?
Life as a whole is pretty good. I can usually fall back into an all right groove, and things bubble up from time to time though, and I have problems that'll pop back up again that I don't face right away, and I kind of let them be, and then there isn't so much, I wouldn't call it confrontation, but there isn't so much attention to the problem, so that maybe the resolve is found. It's things like maybe things like that with most of my relationships. They're okay, they're all right, but there's I feel like I'm always growing, or there's always like some place to go, but I'm not always reaching it, or I'm kind of at a plateau, and I'm wondering how looking into my past or things like that might help. Or I've had problems with anger, and I was diagnosed with schizophrenia back in high school. I believe it was a lot to do with my hormones at that time. I was only 14 or 15 and things like that, and my home situation wasn't always the best growing up, so it was a confused time.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that. That's a tough diagnosis for sure. And what was it that led up to that, that you know of?
What led up to my diagnosis of schizophrenia was I was living with my I've been living with my mom until I was 28 years old, as 2 years ago. I'm 30 now. And she was never with a consistent man until I was in high school when I was 16 or so. So they've been together since I was 16 or so. And it was around that time that I started having episodes, not episodes, but I guess I feel like I kind of aggravated my own biology in some way, because I would kind of self-harm, just not like cutting or anything, but I would hit myself in the head, or I would like kind of have an episode, and it would be bad, and I had patterns like that for a while where I would get excessively upset, and I believe I never had a father in my life or a balance. There was always my mom, who was working too hard, and she still doesn't have everything together and things like that. And so that's a part of it.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your early childhood. You said you didn't have a dad. Was it the case that you never had a dad? I mean, obviously you had a dad physically, but I mean in terms of, like, was he never around?
Yeah. So he was there, but he wasn't a present father, and he wasn't a teaching father. He wasn't the best role model. He was kind of on the dingier side of, he's still out there. I haven't talked to him since I was 14 or so, or something like that. And so there was like, we'd always hear, so I have three brothers, and we'd always hear my mom and him in the other room. They were like getting it on or something like that. So we're just left to ourselves, me and my brothers. So it's kind of, that's a weird thing I thought I would bring up, because of the, I don't know what, just I don't know if being on the air is, I feel a little out there, but I thought that I'd bring it up anyway as a part of.
So you, when you say going at it, you mean you heard your parents having sex?
Yeah.
And not trying to hide it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's not great. And how long were they together? Did they separate at some point? Oh, they did, right?
Yeah, they were never married. They were, so I have three brothers, but they all came from the same father. And that was, we were all born within a couple years of each other, except for my last brother, who was born many years after. And so we were left by ourselves a lot, and we had the care of our grandparents, and
Sorry, I'm not sure when you're done your thought. I'm happy to wait if there's more that you wanted to say.
I think that's it.
Okay. When you were a kid, most parents, of course, do some kind of discipline or something like that. Were you disciplined? If so, how?
We would always ask to be, like, at the end of dinner, we would ask to, please, may I be excused? Or we wouldn't really be doing our dishes so much or anything like that. I can't even remember. So it's like, if I can't remember that well, then it's kind of saying that I was never put to work too hard. So I know I've done my fair share of dishes, but, and keeping the house clean and things like that, but it was never strict. And it seems like my mom was already strained in the situation, so she didn't have the gall or the wherewithal to help us to better ourselves. But I've always loved my mom, and she was, I was the only one I'm the oldest, and I stayed with my mom until I was, my mom and her now husband, until I was 28. And so now she has more of a grip on reality a little bit better. But there's also some more problems that came with the stepfather that I have now in other ways. And it's worth exploring. And I'm interested, and I'm always thinking about these things, but I don't, it's like pooling up in my being, and I don't know sometimes who to talk to or how to get it out.
Okay, so you weren't spanked or anything like that, right?
I was spanked a couple times. It's one time I remember from my father, it was funny because I didn't feel like he'd had the right to, just because he had disappeared for a year or a couple years or something, and then he showed up one day and he took my telescope and my hamster and something random like that. And then he thought that I needed a good old spanking or something. So I reflect back on that to think like how much he deserved to spank me, because it doesn't really seem like it came out of like love or like discipline, or if you can call it love, but.
Right. Okay. And what was the time that he spanked you? What did he do? How did it go?
I think it was in my room and I cried and that was that. And maybe I was grounded. He would ground us sometimes. We were at his house with his girlfriend sometimes, and he would ground us and we would kind of be to our rooms, to ourselves again, me and my two brothers at the time. And we would, we'd have to write in our journals 500 times or 100 times the same sentence over and over. And that was a part of it. And he would, again, it seems like he was like, we were to be quiet and and we were always kind of not on edge, but aware that not to make too much noise or anything like that. So,
okay, and so you were only spanked once, is that right? And then
by my mother a couple times, because I feel like part of my sexuality is kind of hearing my mom and my father in the next room, me and my brothers would like, we would kind of play, touch each other sometimes. So my mom caught us one day, and I remember her hitting me with a wooden spoon because of that. But I feel like that's kind of confused. That's a confused situation because we were kids at the time, and the sexuality is a whole difficult kind of thing to attack like that. So I wanted to tell you that point too, just to, yeah.
And so touch yourself in what kind of, touch each other in what kind of way?
Like, we would, sensually, semi-sensually with, touching each other's private parts and things like that. And it never got too deep, but that was, I felt like maybe kind of an opening with the whole sexual world around me as a young budding individual.
And how old were you when this behavior began?
I'd say it began around seven or so. Like older than five, so probably around seven or eight.
And how long did it last?
And it lasted until we were like, I'd say it stopped around grade six or so. That's about 13 or so. So
like 6 years?
Yeah. Maybe even less than that. I don't have many memories. So I don't think it was. It was probably less than 6 years though, but it was there. And I thought, and I think about this sometimes, so it kind of plagues my mind a little bit sometimes, and not having anyone to...
what do you think about it? What do you think about it?
I just like its effect on me, who I am today, because sometimes people will look at me and they'll think I'm gay or I'm bisexual or something or the other. And I'm straight and I've never had an experience with a man. I've never had sex with a man. And I've just think that probably shaped some part of my being in some way to how people perceive me in a way of what I'm open to. I think that's part of it, of what I'm open to, even subconsciously, maybe.
And how often would this activity occur?
Sometimes while we were outside playing with each other, and sometimes before bed, kind of, but we never had sex with each other. we're all brothers and we're all made to sleep on bunk beds and this and that. And so we would be close to each other physically often, and we're playing and stuff. So
how often, roughly?
Roughly, I'd say once every, at that time, like maybe once a month, maybe less, like once every 3 weeks. It's something that it was kind of like, it felt like a sneaky thing to do or something like that. Or maybe I was the most initiative of this process because my brothers were younger than me. I was the oldest.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Right.
So you initiated this to a large degree.
My brothers are only a couple years younger than me. So yeah, I would probably be pinned as the initiator, where they would... I was born in 95 and my younger brother is 97. And then it's 90... so we're all like a couple years apart.
So if you started when you were 7, they'd be what, 5 and 3 or something?
Oh yeah, now that it sounds like that, I feel like it was probably a little older.
Okay, 8 and 6, 9 and 7, doesn't hugely matter.
But yeah, I think that's a part of my being is kind of, yeah, I think that kind of shaped me in a way.
Well, why is it only about you?
Right.
I mean, it sounds to me like you kind of molested your brothers.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like, yeah. So,
if that's inaccurate, just let me know. Just if I had to summarize it. And I say this without judgment, I'm just trying to sort of understand the sequence of things.
Yeah. What is the way of... I was thinking, like, what is the way of looking at these things? And, like growing from this or not engaging with these is not engaging with these patterns and things. And is that going to help me grow or?
Well, let's not worry about the growth stuff too much. Sort of look at some of this early stuff. And I have great sympathy for this. So just so you understand.
Thank you.
So
that's why I thought I could talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you seem to say, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to catch you out or anything. I just want to make sure I understand. You seem to say that it had something to do with being in proximity, being in bunk beds, and so on. Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not that.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like all children in proximity start touching each other in sexual ways. Like, that's just not a thing that happens in the world. I mean, I was in boarding school for years. And we all slapped, there were like 20 kids in the same room. Nobody touched each other, at least that I knew of.
So would it go back to my relationship with my mom, maybe? And how close I was with her, or?
Well, tell me about, you said your mom's processing reality better now. What was she not processing better in the past?
Well, I think the relationship with my father wasn't good for her. He was probably doing drugs and he was a wild cat. He was kind of, it doesn't seem like he was there for her in a deeper way, more than sex. Or
okay, so just so you're aware, like you're flipping to your mom's narrative right now,
right?
Right. So I ask you what your mom was not processing well, and you start to switch, and that's not a problem. I'm just pointing it out. You have switched to now justifying your mother based upon her own self perceptions. So I'm asking you what your mother did that was not reality processing, and then you're switching to justifications towards her behavior, and that means that when anything negative about your mom comes up, that you switch into sympathy mode towards your mother, which I assume is some self-pity on her part, right?
Right. I get this too. With my present girlfriend right now, whenever she starts to kind of try to bring some light to the situation of, or what my stepfather and what my mom are like, or who they are, I kind of do that.
Okay, so if you could resist that, I'd appreciate it. We'll get to your mom and all of that, but just more directly, you said she's processing reality better now than she was in the past. So what was she not doing well in the past?
I think she was doing okay. I think she was doing okay, but I think that she would get, she was kind of the one to be held responsible for all of us getting around and everything.
No. Now you're back to sympathy mode. She was held responsible for getting us around. I just need the facts. Was she having visions? Was she paranoid? Did she have a persecution comp? Like, there must have been something that she was not processing well in the past if you say she's processing things better now. I just want to know what those facts are, not the causal or excuses or anything like that.
Okay, so what I remember is there were a couple times she ran away while we were kids. That affected me. I thought that, well, my mom was gone, and that was sad. So I guess she wasn't paranoid, or she wasn't having visions or things like that.
Okay, so she didn't have any kind of distorted thinking or mental illness. She ran away, which, you know, obviously is not great. And how old were you the couple of times that she ran away?
I was probably 6 or so.
Okay, so she ran away, and who was in charge of you?
My father.
Oh, so she left the household, but your father was there taking care of you?
More or less.
Sorry, I'm not sure what that means. I don't know what more or less means, bro. Assume I know nothing about your life and help me along.
Right. These memories are kind of vague for me too, really. But I thought that, if we want to go into my mom later in life, when I was in high school, she had a really deep drinking problem, where at one point she drank gasoline, and that was bad. And she was
okay. So she didn't have a drinking problem. That's passive. And I'm gonna be annoying and just nag you about responsibility for your mother, right? So because if you choose to have kids and keep kids, there's shit you gotta do. Like you gotta not drink, and you certainly have to not drink gasoline. So she didn't have a drinking problem. That's like having a cold. It just kind of happens to you. She chose to drink.
Right.
She had a crazy drink. I've been doing the show for 20 years. Like, I've never heard of anybody drinking gasoline.
I remember on one occasion that she went over the edge, did something like that. Because I was still young, and I wasn't so focused on everything that was going on, because everything was so alive back then.
Alive. I don't know what that means, but how old were you when your mom was drinking gasoline?
Okay,
now listen, I hate to be that nag too, and I apologize, but the laugh is a little disturbing. Not that you're disturbing, but you know, we're talking about really appalling stuff here.
Yeah.
And the giggle is tough for me on the outside, because it kind of invites me to look at it as comedy, if that makes sense.
Right.
I mean, this is your mother, and she's drinking herself to death, it sounds like, or halfway there. That's terrifying, isn't it?
Yeah.
So again, I'm sorry to be Mr. Nag. I do apologize. I hope you'll forbear with me, but how old were you when your mother was doing this?
I was about 15 or 16 or so.
Okay. And for how long had she been drinking?
And she was drinking since then until I was like 25 or so.
Oh my God. So she spent a decade as a super hard drinker.
Yeah, she would get on the drink the wine bottles. She would drink a whole wine bottle of cheap stuff. And at first she would have a lot of friends over when we were kids. But after she got married to my stepdad, she still drank, but it wasn't as, there weren't as many people around when it was going on. And, yeah.
And when did she start? I mean, she didn't start by drinking Ghastly, but you were 15. When did she start drinking?
It was probably around when I started high school, around 15.
Oh, so are you saying she, like in the first year or the first 6 months, she was drinking gasoline? That, I mean, normally that's a path. That
one time.
No, I understand that, but it's usually not early. Usually that's a sort of desperate last ditch measure.
Right. That was probably the peak of her destructive type behavior. Both of my brothers who I grew up with kind of left the house too. They kind of saw that maybe that my, I don't know if it was directly related to my mom, but they, one went to the church and is in Christ now. And my other brother kind of has his own business and things like that. And they kind of slipped away out from, and they don't really like my mom right now or my stepdad.
What about you?
I grew.
No, sorry. Do they like you?
Yeah, I feel like there's some distance between us, but there's less distance between us than my mom and my stepdad. But
How old were your brothers when they moved out?
And they moved out when they were in their, when I was 20. So when they were like in their 20s, basically. They were,
well, not if you were 20, they would be in their teens.
Yeah, a little older, like in their 20s.
Well, oh, so then you weren't 20, you were like 24, 25?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they would live with us a little bit here and there, just to stay with us for a little while, because they needed a place to stay or something like that. But then they didn't stay for more than a year or so until they had their stuff figured out of why they needed to have help with us.
And you said the molestation stuff sort of died out early teens, and why did it end?
I think we just grew out of it. I think we grew out of it, and they moved on with their lives. And
no, I get that. That's very abstract. Did they say no?
No, we never had a conversation like that, like where they said no, and they didn't accept this happening. It kind of disappeared in a way. It kind of stopped happening.
Well, it's unusual if there are three people involved in any particular activity. Let's say this, and I know this sounds kind of silly, right? But let's just say there's three people who enjoy playing tennis, and then they all stop at the same time. That's unusual, right?
Yeah.
So my guess would be that you stopped doing it, therefore it stopped happening, if you initiated the most.
That would make sense. I because this kind of plagues me a lot of days. And you're a stranger. Well, you're not a stranger. We're all people here. We should all love each other, I think. Or we should.
Well, I don't agree with that, but just go on with what you want to say.
Well, I don't know. When my mom was at her peak of in high school, and I was 14 or so, I molested my mom while she was drunk.
And so what happened?
She was basically drunk, like blacked out or something like that. And I was I was fondling her, and I took advantage of her when she was in that state.
And how far did that go?
That went all the way with my mom. So,
okay.
I think that has a lot to do with my self-harm sometimes. I think I feed that to myself sometimes, that's why I am the way I am sometimes.
And where was this relative to your schizophrenia diagnosis?
The schizophrenia diagnosis was pretty much after that happened. It was pretty much years, you could like say it was a year after, or it was basically a year after, yeah.
Okay. And did you have, I'm just wondering, you know, the sexual activity at, from such a young age onwards, did you have early exposure to pornography or anything like that?
Yeah, there was my father. I call him my father because I think a dad is someone who's more dad-like. So I call him my father, but he was, he would have porn magazines and things around on the TV. And at times there was porn playing on the television. And we would be told to go back to our room or something if there was, I remember being told to leave the living room because this was happening or whatever.
And this happening, but that your father was watching this material, right?
And at one point there was porn playing on the television. Me and my brother, we walked out and my mom was giving a blowjob to my father, and then they invited us over, so we both sucked on her breasts while that was happening. I remember that.
You and your brother?
Yeah.
I mean, you understand this is kind of jaw-dropping, right? It's.
I feel it right now because I don't really think about this, and it just kind of, I just remember that now, and that really happened. So.
And so you were how old?
We were. 7 or 8 or 9 around. No, probably more on 7, 5 to 7.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry, man. This is just, I mean, not you, but the parenting is satanically evil beyond words.
Yeah. No matter how you look at it. And now it's like hard for me to, how to talk to my mom at this point, or like, how do I say something to her, or, because they just live right down the road from me right now. So I'm...
I mean, you were dragged into appalling sex acts as a child.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like, I swear to God, I mean, death penalty stuff.
Right. It's death penalty stuff in China now, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah.
Some of this drives me to want to learn more about myself and my situation. Makes me want to learn more, and like I follow a lot.
Okay, I need you to stay with the feelings, not the abstractions, if that's all right.
That's okay.
I mean, this is appalling. I mean, this is stone evil beyond words. Not you. I mean, you, your children, your victims. This is extraordinarily shocking levels of gut wrenching predation upon children.
They must have been pretty fucked up to let that kind of stuff.
No, they didn't let it happen. They made it happen.
They made it happen.
They made it happen. I mean, there's a child corruption fetish that would make Satan himself say, whoa, 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 that's too far.
Yeah. I don't know how to go into this really anymore.
I understand that. And I just want to give you my honest feedback.
Yeah, I need to hear that.
I mean, I just find this is, I mean, again, I've been doing this over 20 years. I mean, this is some of the most evil stuff I've ever heard. And I'm really sorry. I mean, what an absolutely appalling beginning to life.
And I've only told this to one other person, and that was my stepfather. And we never really had a talk about it. We never really talked anymore about it. It's kind of been felt like a secret or something. That was
You think? Yeah, of course it's felt like a secret.
And
I mean, they should be in prison. And they should be in prison for the rest of their fucking lives doing that to children. And personally, my feeling is if they were brutally tortured and killed in prison, I'd be like, good.
I lived so long with them, and I lived so long with my mom and my stepdad at the same time. I felt like I've always justified their actions in some way. Not my father, who did the terrible, who helped in the, but I.
No,
I,
but this incident on the couch, this was your mother and your father.
Yeah, but this isn't my stepfather, the one I told.
No, I understand that, but you just said more my father, but your mother was active in this.
Yes. Is there a way forward?
Well, hang on. So we're jumping out of the experience here into like the distant future, so to speak. So let's hold off on that. Again, with your kind indulgence, I think it's better to just, I mean,
experience.
What did your stepfather say when you told him this?
It was after I tried killing myself. It was after I put up a rope on a tree and I wriggled my way out of it, and then I went to him because I felt like I could go to him.
And how old were you then?
I was 15.
Right. And listen, I wish I could give you a big hug right now. I'm so sorry for all of this. It's absolutely appalling. You were born into hell. You were born into actual hell. And it's not like you chose this fucking family.
I hate how I've become in some ways. And how
okay, let's
been.
No, I don't want you. See, I'm giving you sympathy, so you can't repay me giving you sympathy by being harsh on yourself. Or at least I'd ask you not to. Just take the sympathy, bro. Take the hug.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry. You were born into hell. I don't want you turning on yourself. Look, are there things that you can criticize about yourself? Sure. I mean, there's things I can criticize about myself. I get all of that. But, I mean, have you received any sympathy really for this?
Right. My stepdad said to me, he said, well, that's kind of fucked up. And it's not like he's one to kind of go into things, but he was, maybe I caught him off guard or something, but, he said that would fuck you up, or that would fuck anyone up. And we never really got into it more.
How old were you when you told him? Oh, you said, sorry, 15, right?
15, 16.
15, 16. Okay. Wow. So all of this hell is going on. You're utterly isolated from the rest of humanity because you have to keep these absolute fucking demonic secrets in your heart, mind, loins, and soul, right?
Yeah.
And you feel like a million miles away from humanity, I assume. I mean, I had my own secrets to keep, and it distanced me from people when I was a kid. And I grew up with some fucked up stuff, man. But, I mean, this is another level, and I can only give you the hug because it's just so evil. And that distances you from people, right? Because other people having their lives and not living these kinds of lives.
And I lived with them for so long at the same, I lived with her until 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if you remember me. I don't know if you remember saying to me that you loved her.
Yeah. And I tell her I love her still.
Let's put a hold on that, if you don't mind, because that turns my stomach a little bit. Not you, but just the idea that you could love this soulless evil. I mean, the way that I work with love, I don't know if I talked about this in the Sam Hyde show, but love is our response to virtue, not evil.
Right. Love is our response to virtue. Love is our, to seeing,
things we can admire, things we can look up to, things that inspire us.
Right. Like how can, it's funny, my girlfriend is the one who kind of got me out of my house in a way. She was the only woman in my life to realize who I'm living with. And I haven't even told this to her, really. I haven't. And she's kind of helped me get out of the house. And I just bring her up because I see she has some virtues. Character. And I didn't know exactly how this conversation was going to go, but
I have this, it's just by the by, like I have this odd thing about me as a whole. People tell me their secrets. And I actually think it's kind of healthy myself. I don't think we should keep secrets as if they're shameful to us. What was done unto you as a child was beyond evil. And it's not a guilty secret that this was done to you. And the way that I work morally is children in the single digits are not really responsible for much of anything because they're just kids and they have no say in their environment and they have to absorb everything around them and they're just sponges and so on, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, what was going on for you in your mid-teens was, you know, your mother was drinking, and I imagine she was drinking to keep her conscience at bay. If I had to guess, I don't know your mother at all, so this is just a, you know, wild-ass guess, a wag. I imagine that she was so full of self-loathing that she had to drink to silence her conscience, otherwise she would have killed herself.
That would make sense. That would make sense to some degree. She seems pretty numb some days in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, her brain is pickled now by more than a decade of rampant alcoholism, so who knows what's left. But yeah, a lot of people drink because they're guilty as fuck. Sorry, I don't know. Do you mind the swearing? It's up to you. I can withhold.
No, it helps.
Okay, good. Right. If there's ever anything to swear about, it's this stuff.
Yeah. My expression, the way I flow is off. I'm like not so confident. So I have a lot of thoughts and things, but they don't always come out. I don't know. I don't have enough conversation in my life for so long that I think it kind of ate away at me a little bit. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And also, it's hard when you have done things that you regret, such as with your mother and with your brothers, then you feel mixed in to the corruption, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Mixed into the corruption. Right.
I'm not saying you are, but the feeling is, like if your father stole from an orphanage and then bought you a bike, you know, so when I'm riding that bike around, I kind of mixed in with the corruption.
Right. I wouldn't be as happy.
Right, right, right. But for you to copy paste adult behavior around you, look, kids copy paste. That's what they do. You know, see some little Japanese kid, he's like a Japanese kid. I mean, there's some variation, of course, right? But he's certainly not the same as a Somali kid or a white British kid of a particular class or some Inuit or whatever. Like so kids copy paste. Whatever is around them, they absorb and reproduce. And I don't know if you know why they do that.
It's because that's what kids do. That's they're sponges, like you said.
It's a little circular. Why do they do that? It's because that's what they do. I understand that, right? The reason they do it is to reproduce. So your parents created you and we are gene copying machines. Now, we do have a mind and we have a conscience and we have morals. I get all of that. I'm a moral philosopher, but we are gene copying machines. Just like, I don't know, there used to be photocopiers everywhere. Now, I don't think people use it as much because they just, you know, take photos and on their phone and send them. But there are copiers. You know, when I was younger, there were these wild parties you'd sort of hear about at people's offices and, you know, the secretaries would be photocopying their butts and, you know, whatever, like just so, but these photocopiers, right? So, and we're just photocopiers. So what we do is we look at our parents. This is what our genes tell us to do. It's not a conscious process. It's not a rational process necessarily, but it's a necessary biological process. So our genes look at the environment and say, okay, so my parents have succeeded in reproducing. Therefore, my greatest success at reproducing is to do what?
Is to copy my parents, and I don't know if I followed exactly.
No, you're right. You're exactly right. That's bang on.
It's
you know, what do they say? Roger Federer is like this great tennis player. So if you want to be a great tennis player, you should probably, if you can copy Roger Federer, you're doing good, right? If you can do whatever the best athlete is can copy, then that's good, right? And a lot of painters will start by copying great painters and so on. So it's a simple fact that your best chance at reproduction is to do what your parents do.
Right. And that's genetic. That's biological.
Yep. That's biological. That is wound in, right? That is bound in. We don't have a choice about that. We copy paste what our parents do. And we have no say in that. As kids, no, as adults, blah, 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 right? I mean, I am happily married now, like 23 years. And so my parents got divorced and, you know, so we can choose things. But as kids, what we do is we copy paste. Like when our parents say, oh, that's the word for tree, we don't say, yeah, I don't think so. Or is it really? Like we just, okay, that's a tree, right? That's the way language is built within us. And it is an automatic process. And the reason I'm saying this is because I want to give you some context for what you did to your brothers. Because for you and your biology and your mind and your heart and your soul, do what your parents do is programmed in. You know, my daughter loves ducks, and for many years we had ducklings, and they are programmed biologically. They just follow you. It's the cutest thing. You're like walking along the grass, you got 8 ducklings following you, squeaking a little bit, tumbling over each other. It's super cute. But that's just programming. I mean, you can get them to follow a balloon if that's what they see. And they've done these studies. The balloon, they follow the balloon. They're just, whatever the largest thing that's moving, just follow that, because that's always their mother, their duck mother, right? So the reason I'm saying this is your genes copy-paste your parents. Your parents preyed on children sexually. Your parents, and I'm saying this from an they're adults, right? So they know better, they have choices, right? So your parents perform sex acts with and on children, right? So what do your genes tell you to do?
The same thing.
Yeah, of course.
They do the same thing.
Of course, because that's preparing you for sexual success. The sexually successful people perform sex acts on children. And that's so your genes are like, well, that's what you got to do.
And that's not so good. That's not the look we, I mean, I'm aware that's not what we want to do.
No, of course you don't want to do it. Of course you don't. But it's not a matter of want to or not want to.
It's gene copying.
It's gene copying. Now, also, you kept it a secret.
So
I mean, you didn't do it when you're over at people's houses, right? You didn't say, hey, strip down and I'm gonna whatever, right?
Right.
And you kept it a secret because your parents kept things a secret, right?
Right. They never said anything, or I've never talked to my father about it, or really I've never talked to my mother about it.
Well, and you get that they don't talk about it.
Right.
And therefore you have to keep the secret and they have to keep the secret.
Yeah. That's,
you know, those African tribes where they lengthen the woman's neck, right? They put these hoops on and they make the woman's leg super lengthy, and it's supposed to be this big sexy thing to want to, I don't know, bang a giraffe or something like that. And so the girls, when they start hitting puberty, they want to stretch their necks because that's what you do. Their mothers stretch their necks, so they want to be like their mothers, right?
Right. So that's giving me the context that we're the same in that way. We're all,
everyone's the same.
And that's what I was kind of looking for. I was looking for some, maybe you could help me see something in that way.
Well, help me. I mean, so that the challenge when you've done things that are very negative, and of course it is negative, I'm not going to hedge about that. It is negative to do these kinds of things. I mean, you know, there's the sort of playing doctor stuff and so on, but this went on for quite a long time and so on. But as you said, it was never sex. It was just, you know, exploration, so to speak. But the important thing, I think, is to understand that you weren't raised in a good family and then just woke up one day and said, hey, I think I'm going to touch my brothers inappropriately.
Right.
There was pornography. There was sex magazines, you saw sexual acts, you were dragged into sexual acts, this is hell.
Yeah, that's hell given to the copy and paste machine.
That is hell given to the copy and paste machine.
And now I dwell in some aggravated emotional states from time to time. I've brought myself there here and again.
When you say you brought yourself there, what do you mean?
I feel like maybe it's because of the secret or not having anyone to talk to or something, where I've gotten angry or I've hurt myself in front of people or something like that. And I guess I'm having a little self-pity, but it's not like,
no, listen, take some self-pity, man. Take some self-pity.
It feels like, I can take some self-pity and say that, at the same time, you know, it seems like it was a lot for everyone else, or I was just too much in front of people being aggressive. Like, I'd hit myself in the head. That was kind of my thing. And
that's because you couldn't drink gasoline to quiet your conscience.
I wasn't given that gift.
What do you mean? The gift of gasoline?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, so the hitting yourself in the head is the conscience, I assume, I don't know for sure, right? This is just my guess, right? It is your conscience concerned about your behavior fighting against the copy-paste machine.
Right. That would make, because the copy and paste machine is genetic. It goes back.
Millions of years, billions of years. I mean, you see the amount of, I don't know if you watch, I love nature documentaries myself, and you see this kind of crazy behavior, which, you know, the male bird will empty out a whole clearing and do this giant dance. And like, they don't learn that. They're not taught that on some disco show, right? They just, it's all programmed in. It's all programmed in. And if you have pets, you see that same kind of behavior. So you've got a copy-paste machine that is telling you to do something that you find morally abhorrent. And I guess it culminated in what you talked about with your mother. And then you're like, okay, if I continue this way, I'm going to be a plague on the planet, like my parents were, or are, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So finding the moral virtue, or finding the way to step into myself,
So you're looking for big solutions right now. I mean, I've had less than an hour with these hellish problems, so forgive me for not being, give you a giant roadmap. We'll get there, but just give me a moment to sort of deal with, or no, more than a moment, but to sort of deal with what I've heard, which is a lot. So around 15 is when a lot of guys will start asking girls out.
Right.
And start on the dating world, right? And you are programmed to create hell on earth in the dating world in the way that your parents did.
Right. And I lived with them and didn't have a girlfriend until I was 28.
So 28. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, right? So the copy paste is taking you to a place that you still have enough self-empathy and empathy for others. Good for you, like, great blessing. So your copy paste is taking you on a direction that's going to lead to hell forever, and you'll never be able to escape it.
Right.
And you can't go there, and you can't stop it, because your genes are just driving you to reproduce, and the only way that you know how, which is what your parents did.
Right. And that's the stepping stone.
I'm not an expert on this, so, you know, this is all just internet amateur nonsense. I believe that a lot of schizophrenia comes from an absolutely impossible situation.
Right. That would make sense.
I mean, you can't go forward. I mean, I remember reading a book when I was, I don't know, maybe 13 or 14, and it was a book about anorexia. It was a novel. And one of the things that triggered a mental breakdown in a girl, and it sounds trivial, but it's the kind of stuff I'm talking about where, I mean, she had a bad home life and all of that, but she was in school and she was late to her math class, and she realized she'd forgotten her book in her locker. Now, if she went to the math class without her book, she would be punished. But if she went back to get her book, then she'd be punished for being late. So there was no way to avoid punishment. So she just sank down against the wall of the school and had a breakdown because it was an impossible situation at this point. Hmm. And your breakdown, or whatever we want to call it, I mean, is that a fair term or?
Yeah, that's a fair term, yeah.
Okay, so your breakdown was a timeout. Your breakdown was, okay, I need to take myself out of the dating market because where I am going is hell forever. Like there was a hell in the past.
Right.
Maybe the copy-paste is leading me to a hell in the future.
Yeah, and I don't want to recreate that copy-paste.
Fuck no. Sorry. Fuck no. I'm talking about reproductive sexuality, right? But yeah, fuck no. Fuck no. You don't want to reproduce that evil. And yet you are driven because of teenage lust and sexual desires and hormones. So you're driven to pursue reproduction or sexuality. But sexuality leads to evil because of the copy-paste and what you were exposed to. So you just right. take, you, if you can't win the game, you take yourself out of the game.
And then I was in the womb of my parents' house for so long.
Well, so that's what I kind of want to understand is what happened after the diagnosis and, you know, more or less up to your late 20s when you got out with your girlfriend's help.
After the diagnosis, I lived at home and I was blessed with, my mom had two more children with my stepdad, and I was blessed to be there for them, and they softened a lot of my energy, and I got to be kind of a caretaker, and it felt like I had something that was, if I wasn't in the dating world, or I hope I'm not confusing things or something in the way I'm talking, but I feel like
I follow it. Go ahead.
But I look back at that and say that was a blessing because if I was given the diagnosis and I was left with nothing to help me feel better. But yeah, after the diagnosis, my sisters were born, and from time to time I would kind of have I always have done like weird things, or like I'll go out and I found a blueberry bush and I covered myself in blueberries. I'm just silly, and I have like this that.
Do you have any roots in England?
Possibly, but I haven't gone into my genealogy enough.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, because I don't know if the ancient Britons were they're called the blue people. They covered themselves in blue ink as part of their warrior. So maybe it's just ancestral memories telling you to make yourself blue.
Yeah, I've gone past the first 7 years of my gene copy and paste, and I've dived into the past life.
Right. That's it. Reaching back. All right.
But yeah, during those, after the diagnosis, I would go to therapy. I was actually happy to go to therapy.
Ah, interesting. So tell me a little bit about the therapy.
The therapy, I never got into this, actually. I never told my therapist about this, and it was always going over my symptoms of, if my therapist was perceptive, she would ask me about my self-esteem, because she could see that I was low, or like I wasn't so confident or something, so she would ask me about that, but we would just go into...
Well, sorry, and did your therapist believe that it was purely biological, like what was going on for you?
I can't even really tell. It was like, I'm still a teenager at this point, and my mind is still such a cloud of, and it still is to some extent, like a cloud of confusion in some way, is like, so like the points I get across to people, or my therapist in this
point. Well, I apologize for interrupting, but the therapist is supposed to take charge, right? I mean, like a coach, you don't tell the coach what to do. The coach tells you what to do. And if, I don't know what therapists believe, but I think some therapists believe that schizophrenia has biological elements. I don't know, maybe it does or whatever, right? But everyone I've ever talked to who's gone through this kind of crisis has absolutely hellish stuff happen in their childhood. So, like, I mean, if you were born with diabetes, they wouldn't say, well, what trauma may have led to the diabetes, right? Because you're just genetic or you're born with it or whatever, right? But if you have a mental breakdown, I mean, I'm not a therapist, but the first place that I would look is, what contradictions were you facing? What impossibilities were you facing that your brain kind of took you out of the game? And did she, do you remember, I know it was a long time ago, but do you remember, did she ask you much about your childhood or what was going on at home or negative experiences in the past or anything like that?
Yeah, I don't think she really did ask me much about that. That's kind of strange.
So what was the therapy? I don't understand. Not that I'm not frustrated with you. I just don't understand. Like, what was it? How's it going? Nice weather for this time of year?
Yeah. It's like we would go over like packets and things like about my symptoms and my diagnosis.
Sorry, packets? What does that mean?
It would like packets of paper that had
here's how to manage your schizophrenia. Like, you mean that sort of stuff?
Something like that, yeah. And looking back, I liked my therapist, and she was calm and she was nice, and so I don't know, like, what my life is in some ways, like, how deep I perceive it or, like, gather all of my life experiences, because sometimes it seems like, you know, I don't know if my biology is off or something, because my birth father was actually, I believe, had some sort of schizophrenia, like a mild form of, he was also diagnosed with some form of but I don't even know about that. I've just heard mouth from someone, maybe my grandma told me, but I can't really, it's not enough for me to pin it down and say.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I'm obviously talking to you, not him. So, okay, so it was basically just managing symptoms and, you know, don't talk anything about your medical history that you're not comfortable with. I mean, but I'll ask if you were put on medications.
Yeah, I was put on medications. I had a shot once a month in the butt, and there was meds that kept me on the couch, and I grew a little pregnant belly. It was weird. The formation.
Oh yeah, there is some weight gain associated with some of these drugs and a loss of motivation and things like that, right?
Yeah, and I was
and a loss of sex drive a lot of times too.
Yeah, and I also got Lyme disease at that time.
Oh no,
got those big red rings of Lyme disease to bring me even further down.
From a tick or something?
Yep, I got the tick with the rings. I was diagnosed with Lyme disease, and that brought me down. I was vitamin D deficient. I was always inside, and I have this picture of me with my family on the beach, and I'm completely covered up with a sun hat and everything. And I don't know if my physical body also takes on these ailments sometimes in a way that's like mirrors my inner world or something. Or,
well, I mean, that's not too uncommon. Where did you get the tick from if you were inside? Were the ticks inside?
Well, back that day, I did like to, when I was a kid, I liked to wander around outside in the forest a lot.
Oh, okay,
I'll get lost outside sometimes.
And how old were you when you got the Lyme disease?
That was around the same time I got the schizophrenia, which is weird. It's all at the same time. And
well, stress lowers the immune system too, so who knows? Yeah. Who knows? All right. Okay, so how long did you do the quote therapy for, or whatever this stuff was?
I did it for a couple of years. I'd say a couple years tops. Because okay. She moved on, and she moved on. She was doing some new stuff, and that's
and you never really talked about your childhood with her.
Never talked about my childhood with her.
Wow. I mean, this is one of the problems with the biological cause for mental illness stuff. I did a whole video like, I don't know, 15 years ago, 17 years ago. There's no such thing as mental illness, which is not to say suffering isn't real, but sort of it's all biological is to be just wrong. And I think I have enough experience talking about people with their childhoods to have some credibility with that. But, okay. So, a couple of years of therapy. Did you finish up high school or what happened there?
I actually dropped out and got my GED.
Right, right. Okay.
And I never got my license and I still don't have my license.
License? What do you mean? Oh, you mean the certificate, the diploma?
My driver's license.
Oh, driver's license. Okay, sorry. We're switching credentials now. I wasn't aware. Right. Okay. And then what did you do after you finished therapy? And I guess you got your GED. What did you do then?
I lived at home amidst the chaos with my mom and her drinking and my stepdad and his control and his brainwashing in his way.
And what did he do around brainwashing?
He was always a guy I could talk to. He's a guy who talks and he gets along with people through humor, gets along with people with me through, he's like more like a loner, but I could have somewhat of a conversation with him, somewhat of a like get along together and talk things through a little bit. So
that, yes, but the brainwashing, you gotta stay with my question. What was the brainwashing?
The brainwashing is, I maybe I'm just speaking from maybe I'm just being judgmental. Maybe it's not so much brainwashing. Maybe it's maybe he was wrapped into this situation with us. That's maybe what he would say.
No, he's not wrapped. He's there by choice. What happened with the two girls? I mean, your mother was a drunk and was it you mostly taking care of them or what happened?
It was me taking care of them a lot of the time when they were really young. And my mom was more on the side. She would drink and then she would let it go. And then I was happy.
Sorry, what does let it go mean?
She would drink and then she would drop the habit for a while.
She'd stop drinking. Okay, got it.
And then she would start up again and it was this crazy cycle. And my stepdad was also into drugs and he got arrested at one point and he was in jail. And while he was in jail, I felt the responsibility of being a man while I'm in the house. And it's like, with my mom and the way she
He was in jail for drugs?
He was in jail for drugs at one point. So,
well, hang on. And listen, I mean, you don't, again, have to get into any details in particular, but it's kind of unusual, unless he was some kind of dealer, it's kind of unusual to go to jail the first time you get in trouble for drugs. Usually it's rehab or, I mean, again, I'm not a lawyer. Don't tell me where you live or anything like that, but it's a little unusual from what I understand that you'd go to jail first time.
I think it's because he was a dealer.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Well, that makes a bit more sense. Okay. So he didn't go to jail just for drugs, but for corrupting the community by selling drugs, perhaps even to underage people.
Correct.
Okay. So again, you're in hell.
Yeah. So to varying degrees, this was less hellish in some way because at least with my stepfather there, it felt like there was a mental construct for me to be inside of. It wasn't all chaos.
Okay, what does that mean? A mental construct for me to be inside of? What is he, the Tin Man? What does that even mean?
I guess all these thoughts I have are...
No, I don't mind the thoughts. I don't want to pretend to understand something I don't understand. This is not a criticism. I just don't know the reference that you mean.
He's, so he uses words a lot. And that's what I liked about him. My mom couldn't dive into topics in some way. So at least with my stepdad, he had interest in the way he was, interesting things he talked about and stories he told and things like that. So I was more drawn to his corner of the household and not really ever having really a deep connection.
Well, you had no one else to talk to as well. I mean, the kids, your sisters are, or your half-sisters are very little and your mom's a drunk.
Yeah.
But I mean, so what was the household living on? I mean, your mom, I assume she wasn't working if she was that drunk.
No, she was actually, She works all the time. She's the one who works, and he doesn't work at all. He hasn't had a job for my whole living with him of 15 years. He never had a stable job. He was working for this guy a little bit and working for this guy a little bit.
And selling drugs.
And he was selling drugs. Yeah.
Okay. So because I was trying to figure out why he'd be with your mom, especially after you told him about the evils that she inflicted upon you and your brothers, it's because she's a sugar mummy.
Yeah. That's the...
So he gets to be a lazy asshole and feed off her work, and he doesn't have to grow up at all.
Yeah. That's what the conclusion I've come to in my own thinking. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Oh, and now she's been off. She hasn't drank in years. In a year and a half tops. 2 years. Tops.
All right. And is that because she had a health crisis or some other reason?
Well, no, I don't think she had a... No, she didn't have a health crisis, but she... I think she's experienced enough, like, that she... I don't know. My stepdad's worked on stopping her a lot. But the thing is, he also drinks all day. Or maybe he's not drinking all day anymore. I heard he went to therapy. But I heard he drinks and smokes all day while he's sitting on the porch and being depressed about winter time and this and that. And listens to has his headphones on, and he's disconnected from the world. And so, yeah. Sorry if I strayed from your original.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And do you know if your mother remembers the assault that you had with her or on her when you were 15?
I actually don't exactly know if she remembers.
Okay. But, so your 20s are spent talking a little bit with your stepdad. And how long was he in prison for?
And he was in prison for maybe a little over 6 months.
Okay. And you were taking care of your half-sisters, and I guess you were cleaning up after your mom and, what, holding her hair back when she vomits or something like that, maybe. And...
I'm glad I didn't have to do that too... I didn't have to be present for her too much like that. I never really had to do that, but...
But what kind of job does she have that she can get this drunk?
Or maybe she's at a different rank now, but she was a nurse of some sort.
What?
Yeah.
Jesus, it just gets worse.
Right. It's like every time I tell you something, I'm almost excited to tell you how worse it gets. It's
oh,
weird.
My God. So she was showing up to work with hangovers or?
Yeah, probably. Like, maybe she could. Yeah, there were some nights where she was supposed to be going to work or something like that. And my stepdad was, maybe he was making, well, he had to make sure she got to work and stuff, and he was upset with her at the same time. It's hard to relate to any of the people in my story and feel like have the most empathy for my stepdad or for my mom, but like he was upset with her, and I felt upset with her at the same time while he was like trying to navigate her and this and that. And I don't know. Nowadays though, she must have taken a diet pill or something, because she's only in her 40s, and she looks like gaunt, and like something ate her, and she's skinny, and she has skinny legs like those, like a woman who's in a wheelchair or something. And it makes me even more sad and depressed in some way when I saw her a month ago.
Oh, like maybe she's on a Ozempic or something where...
It's way too much. And that was right after I left the house too, and then I saw that the next time I saw her, I've been living by myself about a year now, a little over a year.
Mm.
And then I saw her and she was gaunt, and it was, another step to the equation.
Well, there's no amount of suffering that would have me have sympathy for your mom. I'll just tell you that right now. My sympathy here is with you, And obviously, just to clear my own conscience, I'm sure this is the case, but you didn't inflict any of the stuff that you inflicted on your brothers, on your half-sisters, right?
That's right.
Yeah, good, Adam boy. Good job. Good job.
They're the ones that I feel like I have, like, I have a, like a next, like an opportunity with to be, to show them, to show what a somewhat of a fun guy, a good character to show some life to in a better way.
Yeah, that's a good redemption arc. Well done. Okay. So your brothers skedaddled in their early 20s. You were sort of mid 20s or sort of 24 or so. And did they just despawn? Did they vamoose? I mean, what has been their relationship? You said they're more distant to your two dads and your mom, yeah, and not so much with you. Is that right?
So mostly gone. The interactions open up when it's a birthday. The interactions open up when it's like a funeral. That's kind of messed up, but it's, I feel like they're still there for me to, they were upset with my mom and my stepdad in the way that my stepdad kind of kicked them out of the house or doesn't allow them over in some way. There's a wall, there's some sort of a psychic wall there that they're not, willing to cross with him or something like that. And I'm sorry if I strayed from your question again.
That's fine. I just was wondering in general, what are your brother's relationship like with your mother?
Right. It is non-existent right now. Okay. And all three of my brothers, I grew up with my two brothers close in age, and then 10 years later, because I know I'm 10 years older than my youngest brother, is when my next brother was born from the same father somehow. That's
from weird. Your father?
Yeah, from okay. the
Well, I mean, somehow. I mean, they had sex, right? I mean,
like, and he also, my youngest brother had a better relationship with my grandfather, so he at least, he was kicked out of the house when he was in his teens. So all of my brothers are going through some stuff with not having connection in that way. And it's,
sorry, who was kicked out of the house? Your brother? Oh, the youngest brother.
Yeah, the youngest brother, through my stepdad and him were having an argument, and then my stepdad like broke his phone, threw his phone on the floor, and then put him in a headlock or something like that. And then my little brother called my grandpa, and my grandpa took him to his house. And
it's a pretty tough guy living off a nurse's income.
Yeah,
pretty manly guy, never getting a job.
Yeah, and it makes me feel weird because I looked up. I mean, this is maybe where the brainwashing I was trying to point out is, because I looked up to him in some way. I thought of just, he's the only guy that's around, and I'd always return to like having a chat with him, or he would praise me and say like how good I've come around. And just a couple years ago, I was like this, and now I'm like this. And it confuses me because I think I liked him, and I was into it in some degree. And now I think about it, looking back on it, it feels like, cloudy again. It feels like,
well, I'll give you a little bit of an analogy. So in my 20s, I did a lot of business travel. I went all over the place to sell my software. And every now and then you'd have some shitty flight sequence, which means you'd have a bunch of short flights and you'd have to run from place to place and you'd have no food. And sometimes it was a hell of a long time doing a bunch of flights, and, you know, maybe the airport was late, it was closed. This is long before 9/11. And I'd just be so hungry. And then I remember getting to a city in America and being picked up by someone there. And I was so hungry. And we drove around, and we ended up, the only place that was open was Hooters. It was like really late at night. The only place that was open was Hooters. Now, Hooters, not specifically known for the quality of its food, unless you like breast. But I remember getting a basket of onion rings, and I was so hungry, even though onion rings are kind of crap food, right? I mean, it's okay once in a while, but I don't know. It's been years since I had them because, you know, it's you know, deep fried and greasy and so on. It's not the end of the world or anything, but I'm not a big onion ring guy. But oh my God, those onion rings were so good.
Right.
So good. I still vividly remember like dipping it into the ketchup and crunch and my drool. And now it was not a great meal, but I was so fucking hungry. It tasted like manna from heaven. And that would be my analogy for you and your stepfather.
Right.
It's shitty food, but there's no other food.
That's true. Ed, that's a funny analogy because, I'm looking into some spiritual path, and there's this thing I'm looking into. It's called the gene keys. And you were talking about gene pasting, copy and pasting. So I was thinking about the things I think about, and there's this, you're born on a gene key and you have specific lessons that you're here to kind of learn or embody or things like that. And I looked at my stepdad's, and it goes from a shadow state, which his is hunger, to a gift level where that is called adventure, and then it goes to like a highest level of like.
Okay, so that's sorry to interrupt. I mean, I'm a philosopher guy, so this realm of hungry ghost stuff only goes so far with me. I mean, isn't he kind of a corrupt guy?
Yeah,
I mean, he's living off a woman who's like top five evil mothers on the planet.
And then I'm looking at my little sisters and thinking, like, I feel bad for them that they have to be in that, environment.
Oh, I completely understand that. And I've had tons of conversations with people who've left siblings behind in a difficult environment, but holy shit, man, 28 years, you put your time in hell. Like you put your time in prison. You put your time in hell. Like, I mean, you have acquitted yourself with great honor in terms of overcoming the demons of things and being a good half brother to these little girls. So, I mean, you've done your time. You can't spend the rest of your life fixing up your parents' or elders' mistakes. You got to have your own life at some point. So, and again, we can touch on that before the end. But so you meet your girlfriend and she helps you get out, right?
Yeah, and she helps me to get out, and I feel bad for her too, what I put her through in some ways, just because I'm this guy who lived 28 years of his life with, well, I had one girlfriend at one point, but she was from Taiwan, and she didn't speak the best English and this and that, so she had to go back to her country, and that was just for a couple months, and like a whole year, actually, but a little under a year. And then so she has to come into my life because she's interested in me in some way, and sees,
sorry, she being the Taiwanese girl or your current girlfriend.
So I was just explaining I only had one not so mature relationship with
the Taiwanese girl.
Yeah, in high school. And so this girl comes along when I'm 28 and kind of she has her own problems and things, and she actually has a chronic illness and dealing with that on top of me having my shit wasn't really the best.
Sorry, where did you meet?
We were in high school together. She was a couple years older than me, and she was in a crowd that I kind of hung around with every once in a while, but we didn't really know each other. So it kind of came kind of naturally. She kind of reached out to me, and we started hanging out, and she kind of started to understand all of the dynamics of my household and things like that. And became kind of like, she saw some of my, She's been there for my upset, being upset or having a breakdown or something like that. And I feel bad because of that, because I'm an adult man.
Sorry, and are you still on the quote meds?
And I'm not on the meds And she's helped, wanted me to. We smoke weed together, so that's a thing that helps in some way.
Nah. I'm not a fan of weed. I mean, I get, like, if you're in chemotherapy or, you know, there's some things that can help with nausea and so on, but unless it's strictly medicinal, I just think it's pain avoidance, and legitimate suffering is what we have to go through to achieve robust health, in my view. So my vote, you know, I don't want to let that skip past. You know, you're a grown man, you know, do what's legal, but I'm not a fan of emotional self-management through pharmaceutical, yeah, or through weed.
I would always play guitar, play music, and get a little high with my friends, and I would, you know, like, see things in the tapestries, and it would make my creativity more kind of a little more vivid in some way. So that's a thing that happens to me, not exactly why I do it, but that's how I started smoking weed, and that was probably a pusher to my schizophrenia diagnosis.
And honestly, weed these days is crazy strong compared to when I was your age, or when I was your age as a teenager. It's crazy strong, and it's kind of dangerous for mental stability. And the other thing, too, of course, is that you come from a family of addicts to some degree.
That's true.
Sex addicts, porn addicts, drinking and so on. So you've got to stay away from addictive substances, in my opinion, because you may have some hardwiring to be susceptible to that.
Yeah. And the porn is something for me too, that's too much. It's a lot less than it used to be, but while I was living at home, there was porn.
Well, I mean, that's also sexual imprinting, right?
Yeah.
Which is, we imprint upon generally the first or earliest sexual activities that we see, because again, sexual practices vary widely around the world, and our genes don't know where the hell they've landed, right? Somalia, Arkansas, you know, Nairobi, Alaska, you know, our genes don't know where the hell they've landed, so they just copy-paste. So if you had early exposure to pornography, then that would be what you would bond with to some degree.
Right.
This is where the cuck thing comes from, I think, where people have sexually bonded with watching other people's sexual activity rather than participating in it. So they have that weird corner in the hotel room. Anyway, sorry, you were going to say?
No, yeah, I actually, that makes sense, though. I needed to understand that in some way. I was just trying to think back to exactly what you were asking me.
Well, listen, we got 20 minutes left. It's a two-hour call. And I'm going to say I'm happy to, because I know it's a lot of it is grim stuff, but whatever you want to focus on, I'm totally willing to facilitate. So whatever are the most important questions, here's where I stop being a jerk and saying, well, don't ask this question or don't ask that question. So now you can ask whatever the hell you want, and I will do my absolute best to facilitate that in the time that we have left. Because remember earlier you were like, well, what do I do about this? And I'm like, no, now's not the time. Okay, now's the time. So you can ask me whatever you want.
I have a lot of stuff that I like to do. Like I play guitar. I like to, I do this healing martial arts. It's Qigong. And it kind of resets my nervous system in a way. And when I'm doing that stuff, I have kind of probably not what you were talking about with Sam Hyde, but a blank state, that kind of, I'm coming from a place of whatever. It helps.
Well, you grew up with a wildly overstimulated nervous system on just about every conceivable level, and this calms that down, right?
Yeah. And it's like, I'm just thinking about your, what you've said about love being attraction to more morality and things like that. So I was thinking this helps me to like go to that that place, that calm nervous system state, and go from there. And are there thoughts for me to entertain, or are there actions for me to encourage myself to do to to step into, like, just calling you today feels like I'm stepping out of my comfort zone a lot of it. And in some way, this is a gift.
Well, I'm glad that it's helpful. So I'll just give you like 2 minutes on my general theory of mental health. Mental health is moral clarity.
Moral clarity.
Moral clarity. So when we call good, when we call that which is actually good, the good, and when we call that which is actually evil, the evil, that's as mentally healthy as we can be. Because everything else is a distortion of morality, and morality is our most essential human characteristic because it's the one thing we do that no other creature does. We have morality, we have virtue, we have integrity, moral courage, honesty, and so on. Animals don't have that in general, right? So they can't compare proposed actions to ideal standards. So mental health is moral clarity when we have good definitions of good and evil and we sort people according to good and evil accurately. That's as healthy as we can be. And now there's horror in that too, because there's a lot of evil in the world. So it's sort of like if you want to be a good doctor, you have to have good definitions of health and illness, or health and sickness, or health and maiming, or like health, good health and bad health. And you have to accurately be able to sort people into good health and bad health, right? So I'm sure you've heard of this maybe through your mom, the triage thing, that there's a bunch of people coming in to the emergency room. You triage people into people you can't help, just going to let them die, people who are relatively stable, and therefore you can deal with them later, and people you can only save if you deal with them right now, and you focus on that. And you have to have good, to be a good doctor, to be a good nurse, you have to accurately categorize people into those you can help. And if you are in a war, you need to know your allies and you need to know your enemies. I mean, I remember seeing this movie D-Day about the invasion, of course, of France in World War II in 1944. And these soldiers were given these little clickers. And then if you heard someone moving around, you put your little clicker out. And if the other guy had the little clicker, then you'd know it was an ally. And one guy did the little clicker. Then he heard a gun being loaded. And he thought that was a clicker, and then he got shot because he thought that an enemy was an ally, and then he got shot. So you got to know your allies, and you got to know your enemies, because right, there is a war for the future and the soul of the world, and it requires that we be able to accurately identify our allies and be able to accurately identify our enemies. And then, of course, there's people in the middle that you can convince them to become your allies, and hopefully, because the enemy is always working to convince or program people to become their enemies through the sort of woke propaganda and government propaganda and Marxist propaganda in schools and so on, and media and everywhere. So they're all trying to get the people in the middle to become the enemies. We, as good people, are trying to get the people in the middle to come to virtue. So mental health is moral clarity, because if you think your enemies are your friends, they'll fuck you up. And if you think your friends are your enemies, you won't have any friends. And we are social animals. We need good people around us to get through this somewhat dangerous life with reasonable amounts of moral courage and integrity. So mental health is moral clarity. So earlier, when you said to me, I love my mother, what did I categorize that as in terms of accuracy or non-accuracy?
In terms of me understanding what moral...
When I heard from you, I love my mother, what did I think of that? I believe it?
No, you wouldn't believe that because...
Not even a bit.
What I've told you.
Yeah, not even a bit. So to me, that would be something like the Stockholm syndrome and so on, like, you know, where you get kidnapped and you kind of bond with your kidnappers as a survival mechanism and so on. So no, I do not believe that you love your mother, because I think that your mother is about as evil a person as I've ever heard of. Now, we can say, oh, but it's been a long time since and blah, blah, blah. But as far as I know, she has not apologized for your past, for all the horrors that she inflicted upon you and your brothers. And she continues to do dysfunctional things, and she still has this, you know, pretty toxic, I assume, codependent relationship with the ex-drug dealer and so on, right? I hope he's the ex-drug dealer. So yeah. When you said, I love my mother, what I heard was, I have gaslit myself into having a positive opinion of an evil woman.
Wow.
Or rather, it has been a requirement of survival as a child that I have a positive perception of an evil woman. She has required that from me. In the same way that if I'm in some North Korean prison and the guard only feeds me if I make him laugh, then I'm going to make him laugh. Not because I think he's a great guy and I like to see him happy, but because I need to eat, right?
Right.
So, yeah, moral clarity, mental health is moral clarity. And so if we love evildoers, unrepentant evildoers, then that's not moral, it's not mental health. And if we, you know, there's some women who reject good guys and keep pursuing the bad boys, right?
Right.
And that's their wiring has drawn them towards irresponsible, corrupt, immoral, or evil guys. And that is mentally unhealthy because that is not moral clarity. They're sexually attracted to corrupt or bad guys, irresponsible guys, guys who would be bad fathers, right? Because the purpose of our sexuality should be to choose a good father and mother for our children, right? So mental health is moral clarity. So when you sort of ask me, what should I do? Then what I would do is I would say, well, there's some obvious stuff about morality, right? What was done to you and your brothers is absolutely fucking stone evil beyond the capacity of language to contain or for a voice to communicate. Stone evil. And your stepfather, knowing the evil character of your mother, is happy to take her money and sleep with her, which makes him utterly corrupt, in my view, right? I mean, I think I could make a strong case for it, but I'm just telling you, if I were in your shoes, I would have a moral clarity. I would I would contact my brothers and I would say, you know, some really evil stuff happened to us. And I'm sorry for what I did to you. And not because you just woke up one day and decided to be somebody who does that to his brothers, but it went on perhaps a little bit too long and so on. And so I would have that conversation and say, this is what I was exposed to. This is what I was reproducing. I was just a kid. So there is definitely some understanding there and some forgiveness there. But that moral clarity that you all were trapped in, you know, a vicious, satanic, hypersexualized, corrupt and exploitive, semi-rapey dungeon.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah. So that moral clarity is saying, I escaped a den of evil. And like Lot's wife, don't fucking look back. I mean, again, I get your half-sisters and all of that. I understand all of that. And I have sympathy for all of that. But the thing is that the only way you can give moral clarity to younger people is to set them utterly at odds if their parents are corrupt and immoral. The only way you can give moral clarity to younger people is to set them utterly at odds against their parents. And parents won't accept that. They won't let that happen and they'll just cut you out.
They'll kick you out of the house.
Like what happened with your younger brother, right? He had some conflict. Maybe, I'm sure he was in the right, in my opinion, because I can't imagine your stepfather being in the right about anything. But yeah, so you can't help them. Now you can set up a great life. You know, you can have a great life with your girlfriend and get married, have kids, whatever you want to do. That's you know, good, positive, and healthy in the world. And then, you know, when they gain some independence in their later teens, you can be there as a resource to help and give them moral clarity. I mean, this is why, for many reasons, one of the many reasons I don't do call-in shows with anybody who's not an adult is because I can't really help them. Because if I give them moral clarity and they're still under the care, custody, and control of evildoers, then I'm setting them on a path of significant collision and potential danger. So I can't, right? I can't do that. So yeah, the moral clarity is mental health. And it's tough because in order to have moral clarity, we have to give up on sentimentality. But she's my mother and she, you know, she made her mistakes, but she loves me deep down and they did the best they could. Like all of that sentimental shit is just a way of driving yourself crazy by erasing moral clarity, if that makes sense.
That's right. It's erased moral clarity and it's covered up with some chocolates and just the fragments of just live, love, laugh.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah. It's of course we have to obey our parents and we have to look up to them, so to speak, when we're kids, because if we look at them with contempt, they'll just, well, all of our ancestors who looked at their corrupt parents with contempt, well, very few of them made it to give us those genes. So sorry, you were going to say?
Oh, no. I was just following you.
All right. We've got another little bit of time. If there's anything else I can help you with, and again, I'm just so unbelievably sorry about what was inflicted upon you and your brothers as children.
I'm really grateful that you're here. I'm really, as doing what you do, and giving what you give to people. And I just want to tell you that listening to you sometimes, and like sometimes I'll have to listen a second time through, but it feels like everything eventually comes through and what you're saying and stuff. And I just want you to know that this was this feels like it's been a transmission, and anything that I do from here on out, from moving forward from this moment, will be a positive dent in my psyche, and that it's pretty cool that I feel this is not trying to get too just back to just life being cool again, but it's cool that I'm talking to you because of what you do and I looked up because I was interested in you, and I looked up your, I saw that you have the same birthday as me. I don't know if that means anything, but we're born.
Isn't that funny?
Born on the same day anyway.
And lots of people apparently have sex in late January or something like that.
Thanks.
They work off their Christmas pudding. All right, brother. Well, listen, I appreciate the call. It sounds like it was very helpful to you, and I really do appreciate your openness with these topics, because it's, you know, dark as hell, but it's only through hell really that we can get to heaven. And that sounds a little over sentimental perhaps, but it certainly has been my experience. So I hope you'll keep me posted. I certainly wish you the best going forward.
Is keeping you posted, what is keeping you posted?
Yeah, you can just send a message. The email is on the website. You can drop it in our communications method here in the chat. So whatever you like.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a million, man. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.